object slammed into Earth, blowing out enough material to create the moon from the debris. This was obviously a very good thing for us, but especially so as it happened such a long time ago. If it had happened in 1896, or last Wednesday, clearly we wouldn't be nearly so pleased about it. Which brings us to our fourth and in many ways most crucial consideration. Timing. The universe is an amazingly fickle and eventful place, and our existence within it is a wonder. If a long and unimaginably complex sequence of events stretching back 4.6 billion years or so hadn't played out in a particular manner at particular times, if, to take just one obvious instance, the dinosaurs hadn't been wiped out by a meteor when they were, you might well be 6 inches long, with whiskers and a tail, and reading this in a burrow. We don't really know for sure, because we have nothing else to compare our own existence to, but it seems evident that if you wish to end up as a moderately advanced thinking society, you need to be at the right end of a very long chain of outcomes involving reasonable periods of stability interspersed with just the right amount of stress and challenge. Ice ages appear to be especially helpful in this regard, and marked by a total absence of real cataclysm. As we shall see in the pages that remain to us, we are very lucky to find ourselves in that position. And on that note, let us now turn briefly to the elements that made us. There are 92 naturally occurring elements on Earth, plus a further 20 or so that have been created in labs, but some of these we can immediately put to one side, as in fact chemists themselves tend to do. Not a few of our earthly chemicals are surprisingly little known. Astatine, for instance, is practically unstudied. It has a name and a place on the periodic table next door to Marie Curie's polonium, but almost nothing else. Well, the problem isn't scientific indifference, but rarity. There just isn't much astatine out there. The most elusive element of all, however, appears to be francium, which is so rare that it is thought that our entire planet may contain, at any given moment, fewer than 20 francium atoms. Altogether, only about 30 of the naturally occurring elements are widespread on Earth, and barely half a dozen are of central importance to life. As you might expect, oxygen is our most abundant element, accounting for just under 50% of the Earth's crust. But after that, the relative abundances are often surprising. Who would guess, for instance, that silicon is the second most common element on Earth, or that titanium is 10th? Abundance has little to do with their familiarity or utility to us. Many of the more obscure elements are actually more common than the better known ones. There is more cerium on Earth than copper, more neodymium and lanthanum than cobalt or nitrogen. Tin barely makes it into the top 50, eclipsed by such relative obscurities as praseodymium, samarium, gadolinium, and dysprosium. Abundance also has little to do with ease of detection. Aluminum is the fourth most common element on Earth, accounting for nearly a tenth of everything that's underneath your feet, but its existence wasn't even suspected until it was discovered in the 19th century by Humphrey Davy, and for a long time after that it was treated as rare and precious. Congress nearly put a shiny lining of aluminum foil atop the Washington Monument to show what a classy and prosperous nation we had become. And the French imperial family in the same period discarded the state silver dinner service and replaced it with an aluminum one. The fashion was cutting edge, even if the knives weren't. Nor does abundance necessarily relate to importance. Carbon is only the 15th most common element, accounting for a very modest 0.048% of Earth's crust, but we would be lost without it. What sets the carbon atom apart is that it is shamelessly promiscuous. It is the party animal of the atomic world, latching onto many other atoms, including itself, and holding tight, forming molecular conga lines of hearty robustness, the very trick of nature necessary to build proteins and DNA. As Paul Davies has written, if it wasn't for carbon, life as we know it would be impossible. Probably any sort of life would be impossible. Yet carbon is not all that plentiful, even in humans, who so vitally depend on it. Of every 200 atoms in your body, 126 are hydrogen, 51 are oxygen, and just 19 are carbon. Of the remaining four, three are nitrogen, and the remaining atom is divided among all the other elements. Other elements are critical not for creating life, but for sustaining it. We need iron to manufacture hemoglobin, and without it we would die. Cobalt is necessary for the creation of vitamin B12. Potassium and a very little sodium are literally good for your nerves. Molybdenum, manganese, and vanadium help to keep your enzymes purring. Zinc, bless it, oxidizes alcohol. We have evolved to utilize or tolerate these things. We could hardly be here otherwise, but even then we live within narrow ranges of acceptance. Selenium is vital to all of us, but take in just a little too much, and it will be the last thing you ever do. The degree to which organisms require or tolerate certain elements is a relic of their evolution. Sheep and cattle now graze side by side, but actually have very different mineral requirements. Modern cattle need quite a lot of copper because they evolved in parts of Europe and Africa where copper was abundant. Sheep, on the other hand, evolved in copper-poor areas of Asia Minor. As a rule, and not surprisingly, our tolerance for elements is directly proportionate to their abundance in the Earth's crust. We have evolved to expect, and in some cases actually need, the tiny amounts of rare elements that accumulate in the flesh or fiber that we eat. But step up the doses, in some cases by only a tiny amount, and we can soon cross a threshold. Much of this is only imperfectly understood. No one knows, for example, whether a tiny amount of arsenic is necessary for our well-being or not. Some authorities say it is, some not. All that is certain is that too much of it will kill you. The properties of the elements can become more curious still when they are combined. Oxygen and hydrogen, for instance, are two of the most combustion-friendly elements around, but put them together and they make incombustible water. Oxygen itself is not combustible, it merely facilitates the combustion of other things. This is just as well, for if oxygen were combustible, each time you lit a match, all the air around you would burst into flame. Hydrogen gas, on the other hand, is extremely combustible, as the dirigible Hindenburg